Morning, everyone, and once again, welcome to week 4 of the Relate series. Today we're going to hopefully move into the next letter of the word Relate and discuss the letter L, which stands for love. Before we do that, just a little bit of a review, just to recap what we've done till now. So we've talked about the foundation of all relationships, which is respect. We define respect as valuing the other person as an individual outside of myself, understanding their value, understanding that every person has value, acknowledging their individuality that's different to mine, being sensitive to their needs, etc., and all the other things that come with respect. We talked about that without respect, there cannot be real love and there cannot be real relationships. Last week we discussed empowering. Empowering is an outcome of respect. That respect means that you acknowledge the individuality of the other person, but empower means you don't only acknowledge the individuality of someone else, but you actually facilitate the expression of that individual. You help each other bring out their own expression of their own individuality. We discussed this idea that in a relationship, no one can be passive. And that's why everyone has to contribute. The relationship is both giving and receiving, and everyone must contribute, and we need to make sure that we allow the other person to contribute to that relationship. No matter if the relationship is horizontal or vertical, it doesn't make a difference if it's a hierarchical relationship or an equal relationship. Each person has to contribute, and we need to facilitate that. We need to allow people to do that, which of course leads into the issue of control, and we discussed the terrible, negative, destructive force of control in relationships. That one thing that's an absolute terrible component of any relationship is when one person tries to control the other. And therefore empowering would mean that you value someone else's opinion, but not only you value it, you consult them, you absorb it, you incorporate their feelings, their opinion, their expression, their perspective into every decision, into every experience, into every process, so that everyone feels that their contribution, that their individual expression is really valued and it's really respected and it's welcome and it's able to contribute to the relationship. Okay, today we're going to talk about really something which is the goal of all relationships, which is love. It's a goal of all relationships because love, as we'll see, means connection, it means bonding, and therefore it is the goal of every relationship, but it's just expressed differently in various different relationships. So, yeah. And I think the imagery that comes to my mind is like if you have a house and the house, the walls need to be built on a foundation, but you live, you don't see the foundation always, you live within the walls. So I think your relationship works like that as well. The foundation of a relationship is the things we talked about till now. The foundation of the relationship is respect. It's that deep and real valuing of the other person, which then translates into an actual building of connection, bonding, and love, which is the house of the relationship, so to speak. I think another thing to understand also is that every experience, before we get on to the actual concept, every experience in life requires two things. Requires, because that's the way we are made up. We are made up, and we've talked about this many times, that there are 10 powers that govern our soul, right? 3 of them are intellectual, 7 of them are emotional. And that's why every single experience requires both the intellect and the emotion. For an experience to be successful, and particularly a relationship to be successful, it requires both intellect and emotion. What that means is, the intellectual part of every experience is the guide, right? It's the values, it's the perspective that we have on the experience. And that's an important thing before we get emotionally involved, because intellect is sort of objective, it's detached, it's removed, and allows us to see things in a proper way if we work on an objective process of intellectual processing. But for any experience to be successful, it also requires passion, it requires emotion, it requires feeling. Because intellect alone is detached, it's cold, it's mature, but that's why it's cold, right? It doesn't have that childlike excitement and passion. And in relationships, that's also true. I think respect, although respect is an emotion, but respect is really a perspective. Respect is how we view something. Respect is how we understand the value of the other person's individuality. Right? But a relationship can never survive, of course, only on intellect. It can never survive only on objectivity. It can never survive only on the way we look at the person. There needs to be a glue. There needs to be a goal. There needs to be a passion. There needs to be an excitement. There needs to be something that's connecting us and bonding us together. And that's the emotional side of a relationship, which normally means, and it's normally expressed by the concept of love. So, in summary, therefore, love becomes the glue, so to speak, of all relationships. It becomes the goal of all relationships. Or the relationships are the purpose of relationships is to create a connection, to create a unity, a harmony. And what makes that happen is the love between two people. Now, what's important to understand is that love is both a noun and a verb. Okay. What do I mean by that? And it's very important that it's expressed both those ways. It's a noun meaning it's a description of an emotion, right? It's a feeling, it's a deep, passionate feeling for the other person, expressed different ways in different relationships. It's a deep feeling of affection and admiration for the other person. It's a closeness, of course, in male-female relationships. It's a very, very deep, passionate love, which translates into an intimate relationship. It's a feeling of bonding. It's a feeling that we are close to the other person. It's a feeling of closeness, right? But really, for love to be successful, love needs to be a verb as well. Because it needs to be, and we'll talk about this a bit later in greater detail, but it needs to be actively fueled and maintained all the time. So love is something you need to do on all three levels on the way we function. You know, we function on three levels. It's called the garments of the soul. Thought, speech, and action. Love is something we need to think about. It's not something we can just have naturally all the time. It doesn't work. We need to actually always think about it and activate thoughts of closeness, bonding, connection, and love for the other person. We need to express it verbally, which is a very, very important component of love, and we'll talk about it more next week when we talk about communication. Because words fuel an emotion. Love needs to be expressed. Closeness needs to be verbalized and communicated. And most importantly, love needs to translate into giving. Okay. Now, people often miss that connection between giving and love. But giving, and we're going to develop this in greater detail in a moment, but giving in every relationship, just hear this for a second, then we'll develop it. Giving is both a consequence of love, and it's also a cause of love. Okay? When you give to the other person, you give, if you really love them, with true love, which we'll soon define, you will automatically connect that love with tremendous giving, helping, supporting. But it's also a way to cause love. It's also a way to fuel the emotion of love. Okay? Let's try and develop this. First of all, as I said before, and I want to emphasize it again, love is critical to all relationships. Okay? Every single relationship needs love. It just needs to be expressed, of course, differently. Okay. Even the relationship between a teacher and a student, we find today often that teacher-student relationships are very clinical, they're very cold. Lately I heard of a teacher who said to a six-year-old who came with a problem, I mean, it must be a very cold teacher, but the teacher said, "Listen, I'm just here to teach. I'm not here to help you with your problems." A little bit archaic. But that's because there's not a relationship. It's a job. Someone is doing it in a classroom. They're teaching. They're communicating information. But in true education, that's not true. For education to really work, a teacher has to build a relationship with a child. Now, of course, that relationship has certain limits, and it's totally different how it operates, how it would operate between parents and children, or between friends, or between spouses, for sure, right? But for a relationship between teacher and student to work, obviously there's got to be a lot of respect both ways, but it also has to be love, meaning there's got to be a sense of closeness, and there's got to be a sense of connection and bonding if the student is really to absorb what it needs to absorb, what she needs to absorb from the teacher, and for the relationship to really be effective educationally. Right? So every relationship is critical to have this component of the L, the component of love, just needs to be expressed differently, and every relationship has to have, based on giving, and every relationship has to have love on all three levels of thought, speech, and action. You know, the Talmud tells a story about a great sage who was a teacher, and he also had some investment fields and properties, and he hardly ever went to them. He was very dedicated to his students, and I think it was once after 10 years or something, he decided to pay a visit to his investment properties to see how they're going. I've forgotten the exact number, but it was after many years, and someone met him and said, "Oh, off the job?" Right? After 10 years, he took a break and he went to look at his investment properties, right? So someone said to him, "But aren't you a teacher?" He said, I guarantee you that even though I'm taking a short break to examine my properties which were outside of the city, I am constantly thinking of my students. Right? That was a teacher, in other words, a real teacher. Not just who walked in and taught information, but he had a relationship with his students. So therefore his students were on his mind all the time. So I'm just bringing this as an example. Every relationship needs bonding, needs connection to operate on all thought, speech, and action. But let's try and understand what we just said before about giving and try and understand the whole idea, the whole concept. First of all, let's understand what love isn't. Okay? Because I've mentioned this before, but it's important in this context. Love is often confused with another word called romance. Okay. Or pleasure. Now romance, particularly in a marriage, romance is very important. It's important to be part of the equation. It often is what kickstarts the process of love. Romantic experiences throughout a relationship is often what comes once in a while to fuel, to keep the fire burning, to make sure that it's strong, to make sure that it's passionate, to make sure that it's maintained and sustained, right? To fuel the intensity of the love. But it's not love. Because romance and experiences or other experiences that bring us romantic feelings or pleasure are transient. Right? Any relationship, anyone would know, in every relationship, you cannot have intense romance for 70 years straight. Right? It's just, I don't know anyone that's... You could have love for 70 years straight. Right? But I don't think anyone would say that they've experienced tremendously intense romantic experiences ongoing for 70 years, right? Because romance is a experience which is transient. It comes, it goes, it has different levels of intensity. And romance in its own right does not build a relationship. It doesn't build the depth of a relationship. It's actually quite a superficial thing if you think about it. It helps, it supports a relationship, it fuels a relationship, but it doesn't add depth, it doesn't create the depth of a relationship. Love is something different. Love is a permanent, ongoing feeling of commitment, connection, and concern and affection for the other person. It's an ongoing, deep feeling of closeness to another person, expressed in different ways, in different times, in different relationships, but even in the same relationship, that closeness has different ways of expressing itself at different times. But what's constant is the feeling of love. Constant is the care, the affection, the closeness, the connection to the other person. The problem is that love in itself is a very complicated emotion. Why? Because it is very difficult to distinguish, and this is what we need to spend a few minutes on. It is very difficult to distinguish between what's called selfish love and selfless love. They're very, very easily confused. Why are they easily confused? Let's understand, once again, let's revisit what a relationship is all about. Right? A relationship is when two worlds come together, become one. Now, we said become one not to dissolve the identity of the two individuals, but the two individuals create a union. They become one unit. Right? Of course, the ultimate of that closeness, of that union, is in marriage. The Torah tells us in the very, very beginning of Genesis that when we talk about Adam and Chava becoming married and then having children, they will get married, and it uses the expression of Hayu lebasar echad, will become like one flesh, will become like one person. Meant in the context of complete connection, complete bond. Right? Now that happens through love. But, as I explained, I think a few weeks ago, the problem with the emotion of love is that it's a very complicated emotion because by definition it is a self-centered emotion. Okay, now I know I said this 3 weeks ago, but let's just visit this again because I want to move into something from this. The feeling of love is, when you have a feeling of love, the you is very present. When I love something, it's I love something. It's very different to respect, actually. Respect is the other way around. Respect focuses on the person that I respect. It's about them. Love begins with me. Because it's a very intense feeling of what I am feeling. And when you're loved by someone, you actually want that to happen. You want there to be a very strong sense of them in the equation, because no one wants to be loved by nobody. So you want it to come out, you want the love to come strong. You want an individual who's fully present in that love to love you. So loving is a very, in a way, an egocentric emotion. It's I love, right? People say, I love something. It's I love. The me, the I, is very, very present in that emotion. So when I have a relationship with someone and I love them, it's the I that loves them and creates the connection between the two worlds. And it works, of course, both ways. Everyone follow me so far? Okay. So I love the person, and that love is the glue, it's the connection, it's the bond that brings the two worlds together. But when I love someone and create that connection between the two different worlds, there are two ways that can happen. Okay. Either I do it in a way where my world extends and expands and becomes bigger to allow your world to operate within my world as well. Or I swallow up and devour your world. Right? When there's love, the two worlds have to amalgamate. But it very often happens in one of two ways. Either I make space for your world, and I love that world because my world now expands, which is of course the depth and the power and the uniqueness of relationships, that people can go beyond themselves, that people don't have to be locked in their own world, but that their world, their reality, their experience, their depth can expand and become bigger, which is amazing. But so often what happens is the opposite way around. That love does initially bring two worlds together, but you suffocate the person with your love. And you love them in a way where you swallow them up into your reality. Your reality doesn't change. So how does the love work? Love always connects two people together. But how does it change if my world isn't going to expand, isn't going to become bigger? It can only happen then if what I do is I dissolve your world and swallow it up within my world. Right? The focus becomes on me, and I swallow the other person up totally for my benefit, in the context of my perspective and my world, working for my interests and for my pleasure and for my benefit. Okay. That is essentially the difference between selfish love and selfless love. Selfish love means I love, it's like the I love fish story, right? I love because it's all about me. And therefore, whatever I love is about incorporating it within my small, limited, rigid world. And of course, while that appears to be love in the beginning, it doesn't create a relationship. It destroys a relationship, ultimately. It doesn't bring out the depth and the opportunity of a relationship. It goes the opposite against every single thing that a relationship really represents. But what is true love And what is the most amazing experience of love when people engage in proper love is that when they love selflessly, which means they love the other person, but bringing the two worlds together means I don't devour the other person, I expand my world to allow the other world in. And now I've got a much bigger reality. And the end is this, the end, love is always on some level in self-interest, right? Everyone loves because they enjoy loving. It's a beautiful thing to love. But when you love selflessly, it's not about I'm giving up everything of mine. On the contrary, it's the most amazing love. It's the most amazing experience. It's the most amazing opportunity. The exhilaration, the feelings, the enjoyment even, the pleasure even, from loving someone else selflessly is so intense, it's so amazing and so liberating because I've expanded my world. I'm now a bigger reality. I'm now greater. I'm richer. I've got more experiences. It's a deeper experience. Why? Because I've expanded my world to let another world in. Another world that remains another world, but it's become also part of my world. And that's an amazing experience. But to achieve that, it's only achieved if there's selfless love and not selfish love. Am I clear? Yeah? Okay. So let's understand. The caution is this, the word of caution. That it is very often happens, because there's such a fine line, it very often happens that love begins as selfless and deteriorates into being selfish. In other words, it is not two different personalities necessarily. It's not a person who loves selfishly or a person who loves selflessly. There are people that are more prone to one or the other. But it's very often because love is such a complicated emotion. Because love means that I am so present in the process, and because I'm so involved and I get so emotionally involved, and I'm so passionate about it, and I'm so strong about it, and I'm so committed to it, and love is a thing which brings tremendous fire and tremendous passion. It is so easy to cross that line from loving selflessly to suddenly transforming that love into selfish love because I have such an interest in it. Because whatever form of love you have a tremendous interest in it. That's what love is. Love is that you are interested in this whole process. And the intense level of self-interest in the love, whatever love it is so strong that it's so possible so quickly to shift the love from being selfless love to selfish love. And that's why in a relationship it always needs to be checked. Love needs constant review. Every relationship needs review all the time. Right? Including our relationship with God, right? That's what this month is about. We're now in the month of Elul, before Rosh Hashanah. This is known as the month of stocktaking, the month of reflection. But it's also a month, I mean, shouldn't only be done during this month, but it's also a month to reflect on our relationships. Because every relationship needs review. And particularly in the area of love, because we always have to check, is our love still selfless, or has it become selfish? And what we need to try and understand and to develop is what are the ingredients of selfless love? What's sort of the gauge of selfless love? How do we know? What is selfless love? And how is it expressed so that we know that we're on the right track of selfless love rather than selfish love? So the first thing is there's a couple of different points. First of all, we need to go back and understand the concept that we developed over the last 2 weeks, and that is that love must be based on respect. So obviously when love is not based on respect, it will become selfish love. But what does that actually mean? Love means, love based on the foundation of respect means a number of things. First of all, it means that in the process of love, we consider the needs of the other person. Remember, respect means to value the needs of the other person. So when love is based on respect, the love that we express also takes into consideration the needs of the other individual, right? In other words, what that means is that when we express love, we're also able to demonstrate restraint. You see, love is such an intense emotion and sometimes it has no brakes. And what we tend to do is, we tend to suffocate people with our love. This happens in parenting very often. I read recently it's a simplistic example, but it's just something I just picked up recently about a conflict between husband and wife, where the wife threw the husband a birthday party. She loved him to bits, and she wanted to surprise him. I know he's 50. And it was just totally in contrary with his needs. The guy hated it. He didn't like it. It's not the kind of thing he wanted to do. But she loved him. She really wanted to do it. It was genuine love. Or it started off as genuine love. But it wasn't really properly based on respect, because if she had bothered to consider what actually will make him really happy, what's the most meaningful way he would like. I don't mean when people communicate wrongly, like you say, I'm going to throw your birth upon, and says, no, please don't, you know, you don't have to, it's unnecessary. Right? Really what they mean is, you better do it, otherwise I'll hate you for the next 10 years. Right? I don't mean that. I mean, in a real, genuine way, this was something that this particular individual, it was against the grain of everything that he was stood for and wanted and desired. And she didn't chop that, as I say in Yiddish. She didn't pick it up. Right? Because we do that sometimes. We love without breaks, and therefore we suffocate the other person. You know that one of the things in relationships that we need to understand that's so important, that as much as relationships are about people coming together, but also every person, and this is true, but every single individual at different levels has their space that's private and that's sacred. And everyone needs a certain level of space. And I suppose it's the space that everyone needs that helps them retain their individuality. Every person has space. And there's in every relationship, there's a point where we intrude on that space and we've crossed the line. And that's very possible to do with love. Because love can become so intense that it turns into selfish, and we're only considering that I love, even though well-meaning, but it intrudes on one's space. Okay? This is even true in the most intimate of relationships. People need a space. People need certain space. It's interesting in the laws of family purity in Jewish marriages, right? In the whole cycle of mikveh and family purity, there's an inbuilt imposed space in terms of intimacy, which the Talmud says, apart from its spiritual ramifications, has real relationship benefits in terms of sometimes we don't know how to create space, so it's imposed upon us. And that space creates that incredible space to see the person as an individual rather than an extension of myself, which then enhances the intimacy that follows. Right. But every person needs space on all levels. Children need space. Students need space. Friends need space. You can't suffocate someone with your love, and also we cannot compromise their needs with well-meaning love. Because love can be very suffocating. There's a story in the Chumash of two people called Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu were the sons of Aaron, the high priest, right? And they were great, deeply righteous people. And Aaron had four sons. And the sad story in the Chumash is told about the day that they built the Mishkan, the sanctuary that stood in the desert. And it was on the day of the dedication, the inauguration of the new temple, of the new sanctuary. And if you look in the Chumash, the words of the story go like this. That suddenly the two, on this day, when the whole celebration was being taking place, there's two sons of Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, take a fire, that's what it says in the Bible. They take a fire, which means physically they took a fire, and they went into the Holy of Holies, where they were not permitted to go. That was like a sacred place. And they offered up what's called in the Chumash a strange fire, a foreign fire, that they were not commanded to bring up. And they brought it, and a fire came out from heaven and burnt them, and they died. And that was always a marked stain, so to speak, on the celebration of the dedication of the Mishkan and the Midbar. It's a famous story. And many of the commentaries explain an interesting idea. And they explain this because afterwards in the Chumash, right after the story, where Moses is discussing this with Aaron and comforting him as a father, he refers to Aaron's sons as holy people, which means even after they went in and brought the fire, they were holy people. What actually went on? So there's a great commentary on the Chumash called the Orach Chaim. He was Reb Chaim ben Attar. He lived about 300 years ago, a great Sephardic Kabbalist. And he explains the following idea. He says, what actually happened? Why? They were great people, they were righteous people. Why did they walk into the spot of the temple, the holiest spot of the temple that they weren't supposed to walk into? Why would they do something that was contrary to God's will? Right? And he explains that what happened was that these two individuals had a burning love of God. That was part of their righteousness. Right? Our relationship with God is a marriage. That's what happened at Har Sinai. It's not just a boss communicating orders. It's a marriage. It's a relationship between us and God. By them, the relationship worked so well that they were infused with a tremendous love for God, a tremendous desire to become close with God. And therefore, in the moment of their passionate desire, they decided to embark on a mystical, esoteric experience by taking fire and walking into the most sacred and holiest spot of the temple and bonding with God. They wanted to bond with God. But they made a mistake. Because what they did was, they crossed the line in their love for God. They didn't love themselves, they loved God. But at the end, God turns around and says, if you really love me, then you've got to do what I say. If you really love me, if you really want to be close, then there's a time to back off. If you really want to be close, there's a time to exercise restraint. If you really want to be close, as the Kabbalists explain, that what they wanted to do was just spiritualize themselves and become so close to God that just they sort of lost their physical, they rejected any sort of physical mundaneness. Right? God said, that's not what I want you to do. If you want to be close, I want you to remain in the physical world. I want you to do, perform the mitzvot. I want you to work with the mundane environment and elevate it. But to them that was abhorrent, because to them that was like being far away, it was being distant from God. But God says to them, if you really love me, then these are my needs. If you really love me, then closeness is not always the expression of love. There's a line in love where you cross that's now your needs rather than my needs. Because love, as I said before, is an egocentric emotion. It's I love. And they were so involved and dedicated to the love of God that they became inflamed with this love to the point that they had to satiate this love somehow. But that's where it crossed the line, where they forgot that if you want to satiate the love, sometimes it has to be doing something that seems almost opposite to love, because it's the needs of the other person. And in this case, it's a hierarchical relation between them and God. The needs of God is for you to back off now. Love of God is an important thing. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. They reached a great level of this love, but gone too far. And that's a tremendous lesson for all relationships, that love is so important and so critical. But because it's so intense, and the more intense it is, the better, and it should be intense. And in every relationship, particularly in marriage, there needs to be an intense, ongoing, and inflamed love between spouses. But the danger of that is that you suffocate. Parents need to love their children to bits, but don't suffocate them. Parents often suffocate children because they love them too much. Not because they hate them, because they love them. They're all over them. They never leave them alone, never give them space to grow and to discover themselves. Right? They love them, so they protect them. They love them, so they smother them. They love them, so they spoil them. Right? It's all from love, genuine love. But it derails into almost selfish love because it's not realizing, it's not really understanding the needs of the other person. That's why in hierarchical relationships, like parenting, sometimes love has to be expressed in tough love even. Right? Because if love is about loving the other person, it's about the needs of the other person, and sometimes you've got to do something that seems harsh, because that's what love is. In a parent-child relationship, of course, that doesn't apply in a marriage because, or mostly not anyway, because it's not our role, right? But with students or with children, that does apply. And sometimes we've got to do something that's the opposite of love, but we need to remind ourselves that it's still love if we do it properly, with the proper respect. Okay. So that's the first idea. The first idea is that it's got to be love based on respect. And when it's love based on respect and it doesn't suffocate the other person, it takes into account the needs of the other person, and it's selfless love rather than selfish love. The second concept is, the second idea is, in order for love to be selfless, you have to not just love the other person, but you have to invest in the other person. What do I mean? There was a great philosopher, his name was Rav Leo Dessler, and he wrote the following. He said that at the end of the day, the Talmud tells us that a person is most related to themselves, right? We always worry, people are biased towards their relatives, so the Talmud says an interesting phrase, a person is most related to himself, right? Therefore, he writes the following. He says that giving to another person generates love. In other words, as I said before, giving is not only a consequence of love, because if a person loves someone else selflessly, you obviously give to them. But giving also generates love. Why? Because he said that when you give of yourself to another person, listen to this, a very beautiful idea, you invest something of yourself in that person. And then, since a person is most related to themselves, you're automatically drawn to the part of you that's in that person. Okay. It almost sounds selfish, but it's selfless, right? Because true love, but it's not you within you, it's you within the other person. It's you within the person's world. And that's why giving is such an important component of love, because it's a consequence of love. In other words, a person can never claim, I love someone but I don't pitch in, because then you don't really love them. It's selfish love, not selfless love. But the opposite is also true. If someone wants to fuel the love, you want to keep the love going, you want to keep the fire burning, you need to give, you need to invest in the other person. When you invest in the other person, it's easier to love them rather than love yourself. And the third component of selfless love, which is perhaps the most difficult, is you got to love the whole person. Okay. The difference between selfish love and selfless love is, selfish love is I love part of the person, the part that I like. Selfless love means, if I'm dedicated to loving someone else, I actually love the whole person. In other words, true love, selfless love, is synonymous with acceptance. Now we have to develop this, because this is a hard thing. This is one of the hardest things to do in relationships. It has a number of components. First of all, let's refer to the very, very famous line in the Torah, the most famous, one of the most famous lines, "Va'ahavta lere'acha kamocha," love your neighbor as yourself. What does it mean to love someone like yourself? What does that actually mean? So obviously it's very, very, it has many translations. First of all, on a very, very basic level, it means, you know, care for someone like you care for yourself. That's a very sort of basic translation. But it means a lot more things. First of all, "V'ahavta lere'acha kamocha," loving someone like yourself, means that a condition to loving someone else is to love yourself. True love for yourself. I don't mean egocentricity. I mean true love for yourself, right? What does true love for yourself mean? Acceptance is a very, very hard thing in all relationships. We've talked about this many times. To accept someone else, to accept their failings, to accept their shortcomings, to accept their rough edges of their personality is very, very difficult. But it's very difficult, but it's impossible if we don't have a healthy sense of self-love. Okay. Healthy people accept themselves totally. Right? They accept themselves. They accept that they have strengths. They accept that they have weaknesses. And they're comfortable with who they are. They approve. They celebrate their successes. They deal with their shortcomings. They take responsibility for their failings. But they accept themselves. They're happy with themselves. They keep growing, but they're happy with themselves. So that's step one to accepting someone else. If you don't accept yourself, you definitely cannot accept someone else. If there's parts of you you don't love, there's definitely going to be parts of someone else that you don't love. And then what will inevitably happen, as we always say, is that you will be so busy with your own insecurity and your own self-love in an egocentric way, trying to love yourself and trying to battle and navigate your way through your own identity, that it's going to be very difficult to make room for someone else's identity and really love them selflessly, right? But when you do love yourself in a healthy way, when a person accepts himself, then we can go to the next stage of truly loving the whole of someone else. What do I mean? Torah says, love your neighbor like yourself, right? There was also a story, a famous story in the Talmud, of a potential convert that came to the very great sage Hillel. In fact, he came to two sages. One that was more harsh and one was less harsh. It was two different approaches. Came first to the sage of Shammai and he said, I'd like to convert, but I want you to teach me the entire Torah while standing on one foot, right? So Shammai shot him the door. It's ridiculous. Torah takes more than 5 minutes. Right? But we went to Hillel. Hillel was, as we mentioned last week, was an incredibly patient person. Not that Shammai wasn't, but it was a different approach. Hillel said to him the following. Hillel said, "What is hateful to you, don't do to other people." Right? Now, what does that actually mean? So there was a great Hasidic Rebbe, his name was a Tzemach Tzedek, and he explained it the following way. He says, you know, it's an amazing thing. You have many times a person who has a failing, right? We all have our weaknesses, we all have our failings. And sometimes, if we're a healthy individual, we're very, very conscious of those failings. Yeah? So I know that I have no sense of direction, for example, right? If you tell me to go somewhere down the road, or if I've never been there before, I don't know where to go, right? You might not know this. Some of you give me addresses, you have no idea what goes on until I actually get there, okay? I have to involve my wife. She's actually got it. It's funny, it's like the reverse roles. Normally it's supposed to be all around. Anyway, but got to print. Now we have GPSs and internet and Google Maps, and things have become a lot easier. And even then, it doesn't always work. But anyway, right? So I know I've got a weakness. I have no sense of direction. I'm pretty comfortable with it. It's fine. That's part of me. It's not serious. I've managed. I've survived. And yet, interesting thing, if I would go in a car with someone and start driving, and someone very harshly would turn around to me and say, you know, you've got a shocking sense of direction, suddenly I don't feel the same way. No one likes to be criticized. And maybe that's a simplistic example. Maybe I wouldn't mind if someone said to me, I don't have a sense of direction. But if it was more significant, I probably wouldn't mind. In other words, what I'm trying to bring out is that something that we're conscious of ourselves, that we know we have a failing of, we're okay to think about ourselves, but as soon as someone else says to us exactly the same thing, we fly off the handle. We get upset. We get tense. We tense up. We get anxious. Why? What's the difference? You've known for the last 15 years you have this problem. Like, why suddenly someone says to you the exact same thing that you know, and suddenly it's a problem? And the answer, he says, is very simple. Because healthy people, we're talking about healthy individuals now, because a person who doesn't have healthy emotions actually doesn't recognize themselves either, what they've got. But I'm talking about someone that is at least at the healthy level where they do accept their own failings, right? A person accepts their own failings because a person has a sense of self-love. We love ourselves if we're healthy. At a healthy level. Because we love ourselves, love has the amazing power of accepting. So I don't love myself except for my foot. Right? That's ridiculous. I don't love myself except the part of me that can't get to an address when I'm given directions 6 times. That's not what I love the whole of myself. I'm a package deal. And therefore, because I love the whole of myself, I'm going to put up with the good parts and put up with the parts that are problematic, and I'll try to work on them if I can. So when the consciousness, when the awareness of my failings are in the context and in conjunction with the self-love that I have, then it's not a problem. I accept the whole of it. I love every part of myself. But as soon as someone else says to me something that is negative, as soon as someone else says to me, you know, you're hopeless when you drive, I don't see that as a love. I see it as a rejection. And no one wants to be rejected. It's at the very core of our existence. It's horrible to be rejected. As soon as I feel being rejected, when I know that I've got a problem, I'm not rejecting myself. When you tell me that I've got a problem, I feel you're rejecting me. And no one wants to be rejected. So the Torah says, if you want to have real love for someone else, real love means that you love them the way you would love yourself. The way you would love yourself, meaning you love the whole of yourself, that the love results in accepting every part of yourself. You love even the part that's problematic. You love even the part that's complicated. You love even that part that doesn't function very well. That's selfless love, when you love someone else the same way. When you love someone else the same way means you love the whole of that person, together with their complications, together with their rough edges, together with every failing and problem that they have. You even love the problem. You love every single part of them. That's selfless love. It's hard, but that's what it is. Because the definition is very simple. If you want to know the difference between selfish love and selfless love, if I love only part of someone else, I'm not loving them, I'm loving myself. You know, I'm loving the part that gels with me. I'm loving the part that fits with me. That's not selfless love, that's selfishness. If I love every part of him, that means I've gone beyond myself. I'm loving even the part that I don't identify with, the part that I don't appreciate, the part that's hard for me. That's selfless love. That's very difficult, particularly when you've got a difficult teenager. You know, certain people make it very difficult to love them. I don't know if you've noticed. Right? Now, certain people you don't have to love. It's fine. I mean, you have to respect every person. That is true. That's a value. You have to respect every single individual that we come across with and treat everyone with the proper dignity, no matter how bad they are or how bad we perceive them to be. But it's true, we don't actually have to love everyone because love is the glue of relationships. We don't have to have a relationship with every single person. But there's certain people we actually do have to have a relationship with. Our children, for example, right? Now, children is a real example because certain, not all children, but certain children, and on average, there's always one in every family, certain children make it impossible to love them. But I want to tell you something else about love, and that's so important. You know, the people that make it impossible to love them are the people that need your love the most. Do you know that?
Yeah.
And this is, if any of you have teenagers, this is a good lesson for teenagers. Teenagers very often make it very difficult to love them because they're completely, how's a nice way to put it, obnoxious human beings. Yeah. Sometimes, not always, sometimes, right? They're like, don't know, because they're busy discovering that. And the reason for that, by the way, is because teenagers themselves, by the way, have a big problem with self-acceptance and loving themselves because they can't work themselves out. Seriously, like children kind of know who they are, pretty comfortable with themselves sometimes. Adults, you hope, eventually will discover themselves. Not all do, but some do. Teenagers don't. They're grappling. They're trying to discover themselves. It's like a really, one of the most difficult times of growing up. It's a very difficult time of growing up. But the child that makes it difficult for you to love and almost makes it impossible to have a relationship is the one that needs the relationship. And the same thing can be true in any relationship, by the way. Sometimes when you see it's difficult, it's the person crying out for love. Just doesn't know how to do it properly. It's the person who needs it. So love has to be selfless love. Love means you have to sit down and say, by the way, I don't have to necessarily put up with everything. I can voice my problem. I can voice my concerns. Mine needs to be met also. Right? Accepting a teenager, for example, doesn't mean I let them run wild and do whatever they want. There's no anarchy at home, right? That's not the way it works. There are boundaries, there are rules, etc. But I still love the whole of them. The whole person. And in marriage is the same thing. Everyone has failings. Everyone has things that we discover normally after marriage that are not quite what we expected. But if we want to maintain and sustain and make the relationship work, all relationships need effort. And part of that is selfless love. Selfless love means to love the whole person. Every part of that person. And that's the difference between selfless love and selfish love. Right? So those are the three things. The three components of selfless love is that love has to be based on respect and accommodate a person's needs. Secondly, you need to invest in the other person. Love must come together with giving, both as a consequence and a cause. And selfless love means you need to love the entire person. Now let's just add one or two critical components of the concept of love. As we said before, love is a complicated emotion. It doesn't always operate the same. And therefore, one of the things that we need to know is that love needs to be worked on. It's like a fire. A fire burns as long as it's got fuel, as long as it's got coal, as long as it's fanned. Love doesn't just last. Love needs to be worked on in all relationships. And sometimes, and it's not a problem, sometimes the feelings of love are more intense and sometimes they're less intense. And sometimes we need to work the other way around. For example, you know, people have asked the question, you know, on a spiritual level about praying, about tefillah. The question is often asked like, why should I daven if I don't really... You know, davening, when you open up a siddur, it talks about loving God and being close to God. So a person asks the question, well, why should I do that if I don't really feel particularly close? Right? And the same thing happens in relationships. People say, I can't express love in a practical way when I'm not really feeling that way. Okay. And the answer is that the opposite is true. And it's very, very important to understand this process. Because love is a commitment of closeness. It's a deep feeling of closeness. And that feeling operates within the person's identity at various levels. When a person is not feeling an open, revealed love, it doesn't mean that the love is not there. It just means it's operating on a different level. It just means it's like a spark, but it's a bit dormant. And often what we need to do is, we need to start verbalizing it more. And we need to start investing more. And we need to start giving more. We need to start doing things that represent love and closeness. And that in turn reveals it and reignites the open emotion. Sometimes people think, but it's hypocritical if I do that. In other words, if I say I love you, if I do things that express love, if I invest in the other person and make as if I really love them, I'm not feeling that way now. You know, maybe in a week from now, maybe in 10 weeks from now. But right now, not. Leave me alone. The answer is no. Love is something that needs constant work. It needs constant fuel. And because you don't feel that open, inflamed love, it doesn't mean it's not there. This is a topic actually requires, maybe I'll elaborate a bit more next week because it requires a bit more discussion. But the point is that if it's there at a basic level, at a commitment level, it just needs to be reignited, and therefore sometimes needs to work the other way around. You need to practice love and do love and say love and do things that are loving, which reignite the emotion and bring about again in the open. Another thing to remember, just to conclude this idea, is that just like it's important to give love and to learn how to give love and to learn how to love other people, it's also important to know how to receive love. Right? A relationship is two ways. A relationship is we help each other have a relationship. And we find sometimes in relationships that people can give love, but they won't take love. They won't receive love well. And receiving love, as with receiving anything, is as an important skill as giving is. And every relationship, as we said, is giving and receiving. And therefore, when someone else demonstrates, when someone else creates an opening, you know, sometimes we sort of wait for a person to like go all the way, like we will play games and we'll say, I want to see if you really love me, like, you know, I'm going to sort of play hard to get kind of thing, right? And in a relationship, it's really important not to do that. It's really important that in any relationship, if someone creates an opening, you know, this happens in disputes even, right? Sometimes someone will have a dispute and haven't spoken to each other in so long, and then someone will make a move, like send them an invitation or say something, and you'll say, well, that's all they can do? I'm not going to give in to that. I want to see a full-blown apology, and I want to see them coming, crawling on their knees, and, you know, and really coming to me, and I want to see a complete, absolute, full circle. And that's a terrible thing to do, because just like it's important to give, you have to know how to receive. Sometimes it's difficult for people to give, and we have to help them give. And helping them give means that if they create a little bit of an opening, if they do take step, accept it graciously. Welcome it. Because when you welcome something, you get more. Right? So therefore, just as we have to give love, we have to help people give it as well by receiving them properly. So those are some of the components about love. Love being the glue of all relationships, but it's got to be selfless love, not selfish love. And then it creates a deep and meaningful and lasting, permanent type of bond and type of relationship. All of these things, respect and love, are only enhanced and supported by proper communication. And that's why next week we're going to go into the next couple of letters which involve the whole art of proper communication in relationships. Have a great week.